I should now like to introduce Barbara Menne, our next speaker. Barbara is Associate Professor of German and Film and Media Studies and also the Director of Film and Media Studies at the University of Florida at Gainesville. Her publications include Representation of Masochism and Queer Desire in Film and Literature, Cities and Cinema, Spatial Turns, Space, Place, and Mobility in German Literary and Visual Culture, which she co-edited with Jamie Fisher, and her book, Queer Cinema, Schoolgirls, Vampires, and Gay Cowboys, is coming out this year.
Okay, so my paper is entitled Female Labor and Familial Loss, Migrating Women in Contemporary Film, and it shifts the perspective of this panel's topic on family and nation in the age of globalization to the question how cinematic representations capture those instances when female labor migration under globalization actually separates women from their families. According to political scientist Eleanor Kaufman, women migrate into gendered occupational roles. Restrictive immigration policies increase clandestine migration, which leads to, quote, high proportion of migrating women in Europe working in either the sex industry or domestic work in private households. So women primarily migrate into sectors of sexual labor and familial care, fulfilling the ideological gender demands. Paradoxically, however, this produces significant familial loss for women who leave behind children in the care of older relatives or migrate from other rural areas or poorer countries, creating chains of cares or relying on long-distance intimacy. So my paper's broader theoretical scope, which goes beyond what I'm presenting here today, is intending to rethink the paradigms of feminist theory in terms of female reproduction. So the traditional feminist theory in terms of female labor is reproduction, which happens in the family that then reproduces the nation state, which I would argue is paradoxically undermined by globalization's twin patriarchal and capitalist acceleration, where families are also destroyed or torn apart. So to outline the different cinematic representational strategies that deal with these kinds of issues, I focus on the relationship of voice to image in space in three very different films. In David Cronenberg's action film, Eastern Promises from 2007, Anya Salomonowitz's art film, It Happened Just Before, Kurz davor ist es passiert from 2006, and Mario Rizzi's documentary about female labor migration in Southeast Asia in Chicken Soup from 2008 from the Taipei Biennale. And I started with what I called the haunting voice of Eastern Promises. David Cronenberg's Eastern Promises offers an action narrative based on the traffic of women from Russia to enslavement in sex work in London. According to the traditional genre convention, the film associates men with violent action and urban mobility and casts women as objects of sexual violence and human trafficking. Thus, globalization's crime, the film implies, consists of severing women's function in sexual labor from their familial reproduction. Eastern Promises suggest that women are lured to Western Europe through deceit, but simultaneously espouses an ideology of possible self-actualization in the West through the embodiment of the second generation Russian immigrant, now integrated British citizen Anna, who embodies urban mobility and unalienated reproductive work as a midwife. And urban mobility, if you haven't seen the film, through driving the motorcycle of her dead father to the city. So she's particularly mobile, but she's also the midwife, which is sort of the embodiment of the healthy relationship to reproduction. The film Eastern Promises announces its centrality of the topic of reproduction in the opening dramatic collapse of a pregnant Russian girl, Tatiana, who, after she's rushed to the hospital, gives birth to a daughter, dies, and leaves behind her diary written in Russian. So Anna, the midwife, works at the hospital and searches for Tatiana's family members, and instead, sorry, in the context of family, like she searches for the family but finds the mafia, of course, because they're Russian immigrants, right? So instead of finding a family, she encounters the Russian mafia, Vorizhiy Zakhonin, primarily embodied by the patriarchal father, Semyon, and his incompetent and impotent son, Kirill, who traffic in Russian women whom they force into prostitution. Anna's Russian uncle, Stepan, translates the diary, revealing that Tatiana, sorry, was that me stepping
on
it?
No, it's just gone to sleep.
Oh, okay. Anna's Russian uncle, Stepan, translates the diary, revealing that Tatiana was raped by Semyon. Anya and the other undercover Scotland Yard agent Nikolai infiltrate the mafia and prove with the baby's DNA that Semyon raped Tatiana, which leads to his arrest and then the final romantic union of Anna and Nikolai with the orphan baby. So you have that substitute family at the end. So after Tatiana's death, there's a reoccurring voiceover in the film that reads from her diary, and this over the action. And this is the main text of the diary, but there's additional text. My name is Tatiana. My father died in the mines in the village, so he was already buried when he died. We were all buried there, buried under the soil of Russia. That's why I left, to find a better life. The poetic simplicity represents a mythical origin of migration that invokes the nostalgic attachment to the homeland in contrast to the global trafficking. This disembodied voice, and it's heightened by the fact that the voice of the diary is spoken by a different woman than the one who acts Tatiana. So on the level of casting, there's actually a severing between the actress and the voice. So Tatiana is played by Sarah Jean LaBrosse, and the voiceover is spoken by Tatiana Maslany. So the disembodied voice then haunts the film. A dead witness, a ghost from outside of narrative time, navigates through contemporary global crime-ridden London that London relies on a temporality of generations and topography of geographic locations. Now, the trafficked women as a group only appear in one scene in an isolated and abandoned house where Nikolai, the undercover agent, and Kirill, the son of the mafia, visit the prostitutes, quote-unquote, the stable. And Kirill taunts Nikolai to have sex with one of the women to prove his heterosexuality, which according to the narrative logic, Nikolai has to fulfill not in order to blow his cover, right? So the taunt is about homosexuality, but narratively you understand he has to have sex with this woman so that they believe he's in the mafia. So the shot of Nikolai's subsequent sex act with an unnamed prostitute is then again accompanied by Tatiana's voiceover from the diary, and that tells the story of the hope and the dream of migration. And that's the pre-migration hope for a new life and economic promise. I'm going to go right into the clip. And so you see that we see Nikolai having sex with a prostitute who actually looks like Tatiana. And then you have the voiceover that's Tatiana's, but played at read or spoken by someone who's not the same actress as Tatiana was. So the film's containment of the sexual exploitation of the trafficked women reifies their commodification, particularly because Tatiana's voice over the unnamed woman makes them exchangeable. Through the audio, the naked, passive, and sexualized woman becomes the symbolic stand-in for all trafficked women. Reproduction in the form of pregnancy, however, moves Tatiana out of her collective illegal invisibility into the narrative of the familial male melodrama between father and son. That's why she actually gets raped. Eastern Promises both acknowledges and exploits the crime against women and human trafficking by prying apart the familial and the sexual reproduction in the narrative, but also through the separation of voice and body. So I'm comparing this to an art film called It Happened Just Before, and I call the section Ventriloquized Clandestine Voices in It Happened Just Before. The political art film It Happened Just Before by Austrian filmmaker Anya Salomonowitz employs radical strategies to refuse the exploitative gaze of the dominant discourse on sexual trafficking. And I'm using, for this short paper, it's very difficult to differentiate between trafficking, migration, and the gray zone. So part of what It Happened Just Before is actually that it shows a continuum of these different kinds of modes of voluntary and involuntary migration. So in this film, five visible, ordinary, and authentic Austrians ventriloquize five composite stories about migrating women. These individual stories are combined from interviews with migrating and trafficked women conducted by the filmmaker in order to retain the anonymity of the women and to highlight the structural similarities of individuals' faiths. So the five characters who speak these stories include one, a male border guard, two, a mid-50s female neighbor in an Austrian village, three, a bartender in a brothel, four, a female consul, and five, a male cab driver. And each plays a role in the story they tell. So they tell us, the cab driver tells a story in which a cab driver then appears, right? So in their stories, their lives intersect with the life of this person whose story they tell. So these characters are set in their authentic private and work environment, and there's a lot of extra material on the DVD how the filmmaker found these people who play themselves, so they do really consciously act, but they are in their home environment. So they're set in their authentic private work environment, and they go through their mundane everyday activities, and radically thus changing these notions of authenticity that are often at work when when the topic is migration or human trafficking. By aligning Austrians with the visual and the migrating women with the audio, the film points to the invisibility yet within the same shared space. To highlight the difference in the cinematic strategy from Eastern Promises, I chose a clip from the section entitled In the Brothel. The attention to detail and the mundane activities that the bartender engages in before you actually see the scene and before he opens the brothel, this includes counting money, arranging the liquor bottles, cleaning the table, distributing towels and condoms in the rooms, and which demystifies the space of sexuality, which is very common in the action film, where the trafficked women are always sort of located in a single house. So then the bartender tells the story of a young woman who wants to come to Austria to be a dancer in a bar, who takes dancing and German lessons, only then to realize that she doesn't need these skills in the establishment in which she works. And it's again a very brief clip, and it's there for you to see the kind of way in which she works with image and voice, but also as one of the instances of this kind of gray zone of coercion between voluntary and involuntary migration, but then also sexual labor. Instead of a melodramatic scene of sexual exploitation, the narrative reveals the continuum of dancing and prostitution and the forms of subtle coercion. Salomonowicz's cinematic strategy relies on a very strong distanciation effect, which serves to highlight structural similarities over individual faiths, as well as the structures that make trafficking in women profitable. The stories are haunting, even if they do not invite identification or pity. The refusal to embody migrating and trafficked women either through sexualized spectacles of their body or melodramatic close-ups of their suffering faces avoids the inscription of pity. The narratives, in turn, are neither vilified nor celebrated. The narratives reveal the continuum of violence from care, economic dependency, coercion, manipulation to beatings, and threat about family and the children. Salomonowicz's film suggests that concrete structures evoke and direct the trafficking. Instead of a clandestine life, Salomonowicz's method captures social blind spots. The political cinema of Salomonowicz returns to notions of witnessing to give way to the women's story. The absence of representation of violence makes the projection into a separate space impossible. While the disembodied voice in Eastern Promises becomes a melancholic trace of the past that cannot be recuperated, It Happened Just Before positions the voices of migrant women in the midst of the visible normalcy. It Happened Just Before undoes the periphratic spatial configuration that films such as Eastern Promises cinematically reinscribe, a spatial configuration that constitutes the precondition of fantasies of individual rescue. Instead, It Happens Just Before confronts the legal, societal, economic, and spatial structures that makes exploitation of migrating women possible and profitable. And my last example, can I still do it?
Yes.
Okay. The voice and the body of the witness in The Chicken Soup. Mario Rizzi is an Italian political visual artist who emphasizes local interaction and art exhibits where he created his 59-minute The Chicken Soup for the Taipei Biennale in 2008. The Chicken Soup portrays women from Vietnam and Indonesia who marry to migrate to Taiwan or enter other kinds of exploitative or coercive relationships to be able to work there. In contrast to the other two films discussed here, The Chicken Soup relies on very traditional conventions of documentary, and so I found this interesting that this is actually the film at the Biennale, the art film, that actually has a much more conventional form than the other, I mean, at least the last film. The primary mode of the film consists of individual interviews with women who recount their stories in conventional headshots, except for the fact that there are instances in which the faces are hidden in order to protect the individual women's anonymity. Also following the tradition of the documentary, The Chicken Soup includes definition of human trafficking and traveling shots of landscapes that show places from which the women originate. And then the women tell different stories of entering into these fake marriages, paying fees to brokers, for which they have to then work to pay them off, either in massage parlors or in domestic settings. The interviews very often recount practical details, such as work schedules, sums of money to be paid off, but also attempts to escape or to return home. And the following clip that I'm going to show you shows a young woman who migrated from Indonesia and worked in a family in which she both cared for the elderly mother and a disabled child and simultaneously ran a food stall owned by the man in the house in which she worked. So it's a relatively long interview which begins, again, very often the interviews sort of begin with the practical aspects of her work, but then leads into account how her boss is sexually attracted to her, how I raped her repeatedly over the year, and how he then gave her pills to sort of have an induced abortion at home while he traveled away and she was home caring for the grandmother and the child. And so I'm just going to show again right into the clip. So it's at the end of the, her telling the story of the actual abortion, and what happens when she recounts her situation is that she remembers her child. She remembering her child, which was the reason for which she migrated. And so I just want you to show, so it's traditional, conventional interview, but I just wanted to show you that actually collapse between the body and the voice, but also the way in which the memory registers. The woman's migration, the woman who's talking here, which is economically motivated and intended to support her family, ultimately disables her relationship to her own family. At the very end of the film, the chicken soup returns to this interviewee, and she explains that her husband in Indonesia has remarried now and her son doesn't recognize her anymore. In contrast to the other two films, voice and body here are not separated. While it happened just before, employers placed in distanciation effects to foreground the structural inequalities that produce involuntary and voluntary migration, the chicken soup which circulates in the art house circles relies on traditional documentary conventions which invoke a filmic genealogy of witnessing and remembering trauma. The conventional cinematic strategy remains successful because of the ways in which the face and voice register the affective workings of memory and mourning for an audience and allows us to have empathy. In sum, I suggested at the outset that the larger theoretical frame of this paper concerns a rethinking of feminist paradigms about women's labor's reproduction. I have been suggesting here that globalization has changed the conditions of women's labor such that women function in global capitalism in familial and sexual reproduction, however, in ways that disables them from engaging in exactly that function in their original family, and of course not always, but as an instance. That loss constitutes an undercurrent in the popular action film Eastern Promises, which is ideologically contained in Anna's rescue of the orphan's daughter. So she gets sort of integrated into the Western new family. The loss of attachment to the child becomes an instance of memory and mourning in the chicken soup. I hope to have shown how the staging of the relationship of body and voice and space is central to cinematic negotiation of women's migration of under globalization. Thank you.